The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Along with Michael Coleman from the heart of Alabama Food Bank, I'm Tony Curry. This is a show called Mission Minded. Keep your mind in mission, your mission in mind. We love doing this show every single week right here. And of course, we always take your emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. You can hear the show every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Central Time, right here on the TKR Radio Network. And of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available on every major industry. Here is Michael Coleman. Michael, what's going on, brother? How you feeling, man?
I tell you, it's been a crazy week already. You know, just things you wouldn't expect. Sometimes you try to figure out people, and then people are your greatest challenges. I had a truck driver who was not paying attention and decided to fill the tank up with unleaded gasoline rather than diesel. And was surprised when we terminated him.
Oh, no.
So... yeah, it's sometimes it's just hard to wrap your mind around. And I'm like, he had already had a couple of incidents, so this wasn't his only challenge. But I was like, and then when he's talking about it, I mean, it's just part of the challenges of any organization. But he's like, oh, well, yeah, that's totally on me. I wasn't paying attention. I was talking to somebody. So I'm like, oh, well, I'm not sure if you think that makes it better. But yeah, so. It's just part and parcel with leadership and having to deal with people who do some things that sometimes you just can't believe.
You could have been like one of my kids last week who left the gas station while the nozzle was still in the car, which is not.
I can almost understand that. I mean, I've done that kind of stuff myself, and so you can almost understand that. But when you have diesel, you're not selecting a grade of diesel. You've just got the diesel.
Yes.
When you select a grade of unleaded, you have to pick 87, 89, 93. That should have been a clue, right? Wait a minute, I'm having to push an extra button. This doesn't make any sense. So thankfully, though, we were able to drain the $108 worth of gas out of the truck and put diesel in.
You know what? If that's the biggest problem you got, I'd say you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, we did. Well, I don't like to put all my dirty laundry out there on the street.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. Hey, let me ask you this. And you talk about gas. I'm thinking about heat. It is right now, as we record the show here on this Tuesday, the 22nd, it is stinking, smoking hot. I don't know what the temperature is down in Montgomery. It's close to 100 degrees down here. And it's been, it seems like it's been an unbelievably hot year. And maybe it has been historically, but I think it's like that every year. But you've gotten this brand new freezer, which is like a 40,000 square feet freezer I've walked through. It's unbelievable. What is your cost when it comes to just your energy that you have when you're talking about your warehouses and stuff, and how does the weather play into your cost?
Oh, it's just like your home, because you know any good air conditioning system can only go about 20, 22 degrees lower. Now, this is what HVAC experts have shared with me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not going to be able to run your house at 65 if it's 100 degrees outside. You just don't have the capacity for it. So what you find is, though, it's always, even if you have it on 75, it runs all day just trying to maintain that temperature. And the same thing, you know, two of our warehouses are refrigerated, two are not. Of course, our fifth warehouse is nothing but freezer. But the weather outside absolutely affects it. And so, you know, something we're expecting our electric bill to probably be, we only went a half a year with a new freezer, but this year we're expecting it to be $75,000 to $85,000 more than it's been in previous years.
Wow, that's amazing. He is Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. You can go to hafb.org. And of course, we talk not only about that, but we talk about a lot of business things. We take your emails as well, info@tonycurryradio.net. We also have another show called Bite by Bite, which is specifically about HAFB and the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And by the way, and I can see that behind you right now, this is not a visual one right now, but our Bite by Bite is a visual podcast. But how has the branding or the rebranding since you were the Montgomery Area Food Bank since 1986, how has that been received and how has that been different? What's been some of the pros and cons of that?
Yeah. I mean, really, we could do a show because this is less about rebranding, is less about specifically food banking and more about business related.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, I learned a lot through the process. I had gone through just using my own business experience and had determined that we needed to rebrand and for all the different reasons. That proved to still be true, but there were some areas that, you know, it's funny sometimes as a leader, you have to admit what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so when we contracted with a local company, and it was really amazing what they brought to the table. And I was really glad, even though it costs quite a bit of money. I'm telling you, it's when you try to do things on the cheap, sometimes you're going to make mistakes. And look, we always do. We're like, oh, I can get this guy. He fixes my car cheaper. I can do this. He can do it cheaper. We're always trying to save some dollars. I get it. Sometimes you don't have it to spend. But bringing them in helped us with all sorts of things to think about that we had not. And one of those was bringing in two different focus groups, which helped us come up with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And so leaning on them and leaning on their expertise and just kind of going along for the ride was incredibly beneficial to me. And I just learned so much about the process.
Can you talk about, and I hope I'm not pulling the curtain back too much here on your business, but can you talk a little bit about how you came up with Heart of Alabama and what was important as far as in your rebranding of the Montgomery Area Food Bank? I know that you cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama, so you're so much bigger than just Montgomery. But what was the reasoning in wanting to rebrand that?
Well, when I got here, I suspected that this was part of the problem. And so I approached my board. As nonprofits, if you don't know, they're governed by board of directors. And even though I'm the CEO, I run the day-to-day. When you're making something like a name brand, wholesale change, that's something that has to have board approval.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just about what you think is best, but you have to convince, and in my case, about 25 individuals, that this is the right thing to do. And so we spent a year just kind of playing with it. And what we came to understand was really what I suspected was Montgomery, as it was in the name, Montgomery Area Food Bank. And so many people, we serve so many different counties, but when they hear Montgomery, instantly their mind defaults to, this is a food bank that only serves either the city or county of Montgomery. And I understood that. So it was such a barrier helping them overcome that. And we're like, why do we continually pay for advertising and we're out there and we're answering the same question over and over and over? And so we're like, look, if this is a question that can be answered just through a simple name change, getting Montgomery out of the name, it seems like it makes sense to do that. Now, it's interesting because Feeding America, there's Feeding America, then our state association, Feeding Alabama. The food bank that's south of us is called Feeding the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So most food banks are going to that feeding whatever model. So that's kind of where I was putting up and saying, well, and I was coming up with names, or, you know, feeding this, feeding that. But the reason this ended up being such a great name for us is because we're scattered out across the state and we're all connected, but we go all the way from the northwest, north of Tuscaloosa, all the way to the southeast corner of Alabama. So we have just this odd amalgam of counties that are put together. And so you can't call yourself Southern. You can't, and Birmingham's already got Central Alabama. There's all these. So regionally, trying to identify who you are was very difficult. And when we came up with Heart of Alabama, it was just so perfect because it fits both geographically, right in the heart, you know, Montgomery being the capital of the state. It fits geographically, but it also, to some people, they're like, oh, I didn't even think of it geographically. It kind of conveys the idea that you are an organization full of compassion and care and I'm like, well, that's exactly what we want to project. So it's kind of this double meaning to it. And I think your original question was, how's the community received it? Well, overwhelmingly positive.
Right. Awesome.
You know, and I'm still getting emails, even though the announcement was last week, the press conference, we've done some media. I continue to get emails saying, hey, I just absolutely love the name. Such a great fit. Your reasoning for needing to change makes perfect sense. Because again, if it looks like you're doing it just just to do it, just to get back in the news, and it's not for a particular reason. People know a rebrand costs money. And so they're like, are you just trying to refresh your image? You're willing to spend that kind of money just refreshing your image? Or is there a real purpose? And we're like, no, no, no. We are losing money because people are not contributing to us, not because they don't like what we do, but they think every county has a food bank that's doing the same thing we're doing.
That's a great point. He is Michael Coleman, Heart of Alabama Food Bank and HAFB.org. And of course, so you can always give to their website. They do wonderful work. And of course, we also have a show called Bite Bite Bite, which you can also hear on Tony Curry Radio at least 5 days a week right here through the TKR app and also wherever you get your podcast. You know, we got college football kicking off this weekend. And I know a lot of coaches watch other games, and I think they're probably watching the TV going, I'd never do things that way. Based on what you've seen that happened in Hawaii, and just a horrible situation. And then, of course, with this tropical depression, this hurricane that just hit Southern California, and seeing the need not only for shelter, but certainly for food and just the basic needs of wonderful human beings. What do you think as the CEO of a food bank when you watch these things and you see these setup areas? And just does it give you anxiety? Does it bother you? Does it mess with you a little bit?
Well, I will tell you, you just know that a huge part of feeding America that people don't really appreciate, don't really know about, and don't really fully appreciate is that disaster relief is a big part of what we do.
Yeah.
So whenever there is a disaster that takes place in the United States, so this started out in Hawaii, Feeding America Network, which we're all tied into, immediately sent out and said, here's what they need that we can ship there. And so food banks just start saying, well, I have this surplus. I have this, you know, here's what I can do. And we give out of our own supplies and instantly start shipping out, you know, through trucks, railheads, whatever we need to do to begin to address that. And to the point where they said, look, this is so complex. What we're still trying to recover, you know, any remains. We're still unfolding. That's really what we need more now is dollars. And so that's not something that we do directly. So we don't give our donors dollars to another food bank. We give supplies and any kind of assistance, technical assistance or anything we can give. But Feeding America as part of the network comes along and helps them with those kind of things. But I will tell you, when I look at what's happened in California and the mudslides and all this desert area, and they say, I listened to a guy say, if you get over a half a foot of rain, you're going to be half flooding. And now yep. Some of those places, Palm Springs has almost got a year's worth of rain in, you know, 2 days, mm-hmm. 4.5 feet of rain. And so, that the kind of devastation and what ends up happening is a lot of those roads get closed off. So even if you do still have a grocery store that's open, now there's no access to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And so now for the first time, even people with money can find themselves challenged to get food. And it's really can serve as a model or a metaphor, if you will, just a picture that people in Alabama, people in a lot of rural places throughout the United States, they're 30 or 35 miles from a grocery store. Some counties in Alabama don't have a name brand grocery store. They have some of the smaller things like Dollar General now has started to do some like little markets. But a lot of the grocery stores, you know, the Walmarts, the Publix, all the ones that we have that we enjoy, they're like, you know, we can't put that in our rural area. We just can't get our money back on. It's too difficult. And so what happens is you have a family who's living out there and them driving 35 miles to be able to get to a grocery store to get fresh produce and to get fresh. It's just too costly with gas being, you know, back up to $3.50, $3.60 a gallon. So lots of times, and those are what we call food insecure people, where they're not necessarily under the poverty level, but their access to food is limited by all sorts of other barriers. And so you see that where even people who have the means now are struggling in that area out there. And I'm sure all the food banks and all that are rallying together and helping that. It's just such a big part of that. But here every day in our fight, we see those challenges of just trying to keep healthy food from hitting the landfill, and getting it out to those remote areas.
And I think that's the part that really surprised a lot of us. We just assumed that since, and by the way, it was 64 years ago yesterday, I believe, that Hawaii became our 50th state. The crazy thing about Hawaii is I want to say like 37 or 38% of their population is below the poverty level. And you just think of how beautiful and what a treasure it is and just how gorgeous it is. People love to vacation there. And it's not like it's a rich state. It's not Silicon Valley, man.
Well, when it's better than in the Bahamas, but when I went to the Bahamas and they put you on this, you have to fight through all the people selling stuff right off the tour ship, and then you get on a bus or whatever, and they wheel you through, and you see incredible poverty until they get you out to the beach. And I wasn't at the fancy, you could see it down the coast. And people fly into there and they get taken there and they say, this is a paradise. But for the vast majority of people, without tourists, they can't make it.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's the same way down in seemingly anyway in Hawaii.
I was in Jamaica. This was probably 30, 35 years ago with a radio station. And there was a little boy sitting on the side of the road next to a goat, and he had a pocket knife out and he was carving this little wooden bird. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And it wasn't even something it was for sale. He's like, I'm not selling this. And I said, I don't want to buy it. It's cool. And he's like, well, you know, what would you give me for it? And I thought, man, what a cool gift it would be to get this little bird, you know? And so I was like, what do you want for it? And he's like, can you give me $20 for it? And so I was like, oh yeah, I'll give you $20 for that bird just to have the story behind it. And so I give him $20. So I get to the airport and there's like 150 of them and they're 50 cents a piece. he was just pulling another bird out and pretending he was whittling it and selling them for $20 a piece. I said, you go, boy. He's Michael Coleman. HAFB.org is their website. All right. So every once in a while, and you're getting pretty good at this, you send me just a little tagline of something you want to talk about on Mission Minded this week, the need for curiosity and problem solving. And I'm always thinking, okay, what just happened to him? And why did he come up with this idea? Or did he just read something? So tell me why you came up with a need for curiosity and problem solving, and tell me, what does that mean?
Well, it does come out of an article. I like to give credit where I can by Sam Wheatley. And it's just the first part of the article, but let me tell you something. It's the number one problem that we have here. And as I've gone around and talked to other people, they have the same kind of problem. So my personal style, and I think I've said on other shows, is I tend to delegate down to my directors. And when I give you the responsibilities, I'm going to give you the boundaries. I'm going to give you, don't go further left than this. Don't go further right. But in that, my directors are expected to use their own problem solving skills. Now, I tell them if they get stuck or if it's a big decision and they just don't feel comfortable, come back and talk with me. We'll work it through. But I don't want to just be making decisions and then become taskmasters.
Yeah.
That's not preparing them for the next level. It's not helping them. It doesn't help the organization. So I say, when they come in, I expect you to be able to problem solve. Well, the directors I have now can problem solve. But what I have found is, as you go down layers to your managers, to your supervisors, that ability just seems to go away. And so, you wonder, why is it, how do we get here? Well, sometimes some leaders are such micromanagers, they don't give anybody the flexibility. As you're being brought up, all you do is, you're a supervisor. Well, why are you a supervisor? Not because you have the ability to problem solve and come up with creative solutions. It's your boss told you to make sure this was done, and then you went out and just bossed everybody else into doing it. But that's supervising. That's not me. But you're not really solving any problems. You're not really bringing any new solutions to the table. And that's what I want to empower people to do. But I'm just amazed at how many people do not have basic problem solving skills. Now, I spent a lot of time dealing with those in poverty and the poverty culture. And one of the greatest challenges that you see in the poverty culture, and it doesn't matter if you're white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, is lots of times when you get into these different environments is having to be able to assess, okay, here's my resources, here's where I am, here's what I can do to get through and solve these problems. And so you just see it all over. And it's just so discouraging to me because to me, you can't be an effective leader without being able to look at the situation, evaluate, oh, here's what I can do, here's what I can't do, what's possible. This whole article, though, is talking about curiosity because there's people who are some of the most, they're great heads of organizations. They can get things done, but in terms of being a leader, they are not effective leaders. And part of that is because they're afraid to ask questions. And the whole point of this article is don't be afraid to ask questions. You need to be curious. And the example he uses, I think, is great. Something we can all relate to, like a five-year-old outside playing, and you come across, you know, it could be a snail, it could be a frog, it could be whatever. Or you're out there trying to build a fort and you're trying to get, you know, whatever it is. And you start asking questions. Where did this come from? How do you do this? How did you do it? And so this natural inquisitiveness leads you to be able to use your brain and think through situations. And a lot of that's gone now. When you're just sitting there just gaming out or somebody's just telling you every single day. I mean, sometimes I just want to punch my grandkids right in the head because they just expect their mom to, you know, lay their clothes out every day. Don't make me have to think about anything. I'm just going to spoon feed you everything. And I'm like, when they get up in the world, they're going to, every time they run into a robot, they're going to turn around and say, well, what's mama going to do to come fix this?
Yeah.
They got to get in there. But part of this, when I look at it, it really spoke to me is I know a lot of people who are afraid to ask questions. Now, I will tell you, my wife hates going out with me because she knows if I meet somebody that I tend to immediately, especially when I find out what they do and it's not something I'm familiar with, I'm just going to bombard them with questions. But I told her part of this is you can create a conversation with anybody if you ask them about what they're interested in and get them talking about what they're interested in. So I cannot begin to tell you the thousands of conversations where I've said, well, what do you do? I mean, it could be something like I breed snails or something. And I'm like, oh, really? I have never even thought about that. What are some of the things that goes into that? And you just start learning things and it's just little tidbits of knowledge, but it's really more about the knowledge. It's about getting in the habit of asking questions. Because now when I attack problems, I'm like, okay, well, here's what we've been doing. Well, that's not working. So, or it's not working as effectively. Do we need to just tweak this or do we need to approach the problem from a whole different perspective? And then you begin to just brainstorm and let your mind come up with all sorts of solutions. And I'm telling you, when you get an organization doing that and you get a bunch of people in the room doing that, everybody has buy-in. You get a lot of energy. You leave there. Everybody feels like they've been part of the problem solving. It's not just the boss vomiting down solutions and directives and them just going out carrying it out.
We talked about that last week about how to icebreak a little bit and how to open up conversations, particularly when it is trying to find people to actually give to your cause and how to find out more about them. And you can do it on an airplane or do it in a men's room or do it at a restaurant or wherever. Yeah, I always tell my kids, it's always okay to ask questions. Just don't ask the same question twice. Because right. If you ask the boss, hey, listen, can you tell me again how to do this? Then that makes it look like you're not paying attention. And I'll go back to my high school days. The smartest kids in school were always the ones where the teacher said, does anyone have a question? And we're all trying to get the heck out. And that right. One person would always wait. And I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, we're all getting C's and B's and that person's getting A's because they're asking the questions that we all want to ask, but we don't want to look like total idiots by doing that. Well, if you're, and guys are the worst because we know we don't ask for directions and we'll always figure things out. We won't read directions. We're just, it's just a role thing that guys just do. And women will always say, I'll take care of it. I'll ask the questions. I'll figure it out. And they finish the job first. Is there an underlying current to why people don't want to ask questions? Is it all just because they don't want to look like a fool because they're going to ask a stupid question? Or is it because they think they're better than everybody else? Is there an underlying current of why they do that?
Well, I will tell you, both of those are very strong reasons. I have worked for people who there's a bit of narcissism and some strong levels of narcissism. And matter of fact, I even had this disagreement one time with a board member. And I was very honest and said something to the effect. We were not having one of what I would call one of my finer moments, but we were having a very honest conversation. And so what I told this person was, you know, the problem is that regardless of what we're talking about, you feel as though you're the smartest person in the room. And so you feel like you have to tweak or add to an idea, regardless of what's said or regardless if it's something that they have any expertise on. And the people that I respect, and I will speak to the person, the second in charge here, she's my chief impact officer, Joanne Johnson. One of the things that I admire most about Joanne is Joanne can come in there and she can be in a meeting, and that meeting can be an hour and a half, and she never opened her mouth. And one time that happened, and I said, "Why didn't you say anything?" And she said, "I didn't feel as though I had anything to add. I was just listening and learning."
Okay.
And then other times she speaks up when she sees, she evaluates and says, "What I have to say now will matter, and it will affect the room. It will affect the conversation or the direction in which this conversation is going." There's some people that can't do that. They cannot bring, they feel like either they have to speak on every issue or they're not going to ask questions, because if they can't figure it out, surely these people over here can't, because I'm in charge because I'm smarter than they are. I just saw a meme the other day that talked about the dumbest thing you can do is be the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a great point.
You don't want to be the smartest person in the room. You want to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you.
You may think you're the smartest person, but you don't have to let everyone know.
You may think you are.
Exactly. This is mission.
About the pride issue. I do think it's a big pride issue because people are lots of times very vulnerable. Now, it just so happens, and I say this a little tongue-in-cheek, but there's some truth to it. I've screwed up so much in my life that it doesn't even bother me anymore. People tease me about something I do or say, and I'm like, "Hey, just get in."
That just
line.
Comes with old age.
That's right. I mean, you think that's bad. I got 10 stories that beat that of what I've done over in my life. So when people tease me about a bad decision or I make a mistake, it has no effect anymore. I have no self-worth. It's all been melted into the ground. But so it genuinely doesn't bother me to ask the question or for me to say, "Look, guys, I haven't been." I will give you a great example of something that's happened recently. I don't have any warehouse. I'm here at this food bank, and we have almost 100,000 square feet of warehouse. And so they start talking about things like, "Hey, we need to be rotating our inventory." When there's all these names coming up, and I'm like, "I don't even know what that means." So I ended up called Feeding America and said, "Hey, I need some help." And ended up contracting with a guy who used to be a director of operations at another food bank, came up here, trained our guys, got us really going. But I had to start with me saying, "Guys, y'all are talking over my head. I don't understand what you're saying. But I know I need to." So I've got to get smarter people in here to help us out.
That is really hard. I have that a lot in my business where people are talking acronyms and I have no clue what they're talking about. You know what this is? Of course I do. And I'm writing it down in my book just so when I can get home, I can find out exactly what these words said. Hey, you're watching and listening to Mission Minded. We have another show called Bite by Bite. Make sure you check that out here on Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.